This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And it is a beautiful day here in Florida. Oh, wow. At the bottom of the hour, my guest is Lee Lewis, and she's written a wonderful book. It's called Pirate Queens. It's a Nat Geo book, and I am so happy always when I get a Nat Geo book. And this one is for kids, and it is about pirates. And I love stories about pirates, so I'm looking forward to that at the bottom of the hour. But right now, I get to turn to somebody, well, who I just, I can't say I discovered him, because as everyone knows, here at the beginning of the year, we have started a new series of book buzzes that go along with Rita Moreau does book buzzes for mysteries and thrillers. Devon Miller does book buzzes for children's books. And now, just to make it really exciting, we've added Bria Burton, who is a sci-fi writer and an expert on science fiction. And so she did her first book buzz for January, and it was for Jeffrey A. Carver's book called Sunborn. Now, I have to admit, I had not read Jeffrey's books before, and so this is why we decided to do these book buzzes, to introduce people, and even me, to authors that we might not know, and to help promote their books. So I am so happy to welcome Jeffrey to the program. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Patsy.
Wow, this is exciting.
It's exciting for me, too.
You know, as I said, you heard that, you know, Bria Burton did this little two-minute promo to tell people about your book, to encourage them to read your book. And I think it's been very successful because you got me to read your book. And I love it. And I'm a great sci-fi follower. I've had many wonderful science fiction writers on the program. Mike Resnick, who was one of my favorite authors, and he passed away, but he left a whole catalog of science fiction that is wonderful. And so I was happy with Bria's selection of you.
Great. I was happy, too. I didn't know anything about it until she sent me a note and said, hey, I've reviewed your book.
Well, I think
it's a wonderful job.
She did. She's brilliant at this, and this was her first one, and we're going to have one every month to highlight and to support authors. And so tell us about Sunborn. She was so taken with it and so enthusiastic about it. We'll play her little promo at the end of our interview today, but go ahead and tell us about Sunborn, which is the fourth book in the series that you call the Chaos Chronicles.
That's right. It came out some years ago. It's actually my more recent books followed Sunborn, called The Reefs of Time and Crucible of Time. So Bria came right into the middle of the story, and I was actually delighted to hear her say that she had no trouble getting into the story, even there just jumping in midstream. Sunborn is a continuing story about a company of friends. The friends are one human, a number of aliens, some AIs and robots, and they have been thrown into basically world saving. They didn't ask for the job; they were volunteered for the job, and they have to summon their resources to do the best they can. And in Sunborn, they go deep into the heart of what we know as the Orion Nebula. In the context of the story, it's known as Star Maker. And they have to find out what is causing stars to die. So this book actually includes intelligent stars and intelligent singularities and a number of, let's just say science fictional elements that I found a lot of fun to work with. But they're told from the point of view of a human named John Bandicoot, and a lot of this has to do with really his personal odyssey from Earth and from a job he had on Triton, the moon of Neptune, and now he's moving around the galaxy. So it's a very personal story as well as a cosmic story.
And the first book was Neptune Crossing, right?
That's right. That's right.
And so that introduced him and his quest and what was going to go on for the rest of his his career here as a star searcher. So tell us about him. Tell us where you got the idea for him and more about him.
Well, John Bandicoot was a survey pilot. He was working, this is a not too far into the future, working surveying possible mining sites on the moon of Neptune named Triton. And he had suffered, in the time of his work, a lot of piloting is done by direct connection between the mind and the computer of the ship using neural implants. Well, his implants had gone bad, and a botched surgery left him unable to use them and subject to occasional fits of something called silence fugue, where he just goes into a semi-psychotic state for a short period of time. And it's in the course of that, one of these events, that he encounters an alien intelligence that's been waiting beneath the surface of Triton for millennia for the humans to show up and discover it. And this alien has a purpose in mind, the first of which is to ask him to save the Earth from a rogue comet. And it goes on from there. But it's about his odyssey of getting to know this alien and deciding whether to sacrifice everything about his own life to, first of all, save the Earth, and then later just encounter circumstances that he could not have imagined.
Well, you've been having fun, I think, writing these books.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. And I started this a long time ago, and I've been working my way through this series for quite a few years. Now, you asked me where the character came from, and I'm not sure I can give you an answer to that. Very often my stories start with just a single idea or an image. And in this case, there were two ideas that came together in my head. And one was this man who was out of his mind with silence fugue on another world. And the other idea was I've been reading about chaos theory and how it causes unpredictable movements of objects in the solar system. And those two things just sort of twirled around in my head like two atoms dancing with each other, and they came together, and the story was born.
Well, I've always been interested. Well, I wasn't always interested in chaos theory, but I became interested in chaos theory in a very strange way. One day I was driving my kids to their violin and piano lesson, and I pulled up to a major road, 8-lane road, so 4 lanes going in each direction. And it was by accident, I turned into this road that did not have a light. And I had to cross this road to get to the other side where the music teacher was. And I mean, I was like really panicky, even to turn right in the direction, you know, of the traffic. It was terrible. And then my son looked up at me and he said, just wait. He said, according to chaos theory, at some point, there will be no cars, and you will be able to go across. And I, yeah, sure. He was, I should point out, 6 years old. He was already in Mensa. He had been accepted to Mensa when he was 4 years old. and I listened to him, and sure enough, after, you know, it was like a 10-minute wait, there were no cars, and I could just plow right across. It was amazing. So I love chaos theory.
Yeah. It's a fascinating field of study.
So how did you get involved in astronomy? Were you, well, you didn't go to college to study astronomy, did you?
Well, I actually did take an astronomy course when I was an undergraduate. And I went to school thinking that I might become a scientist, in fact. I'd always been interested in astronomy and physics. I ultimately decided to pursue writing and got my degree in English. But I've been a science junkie for my entire life. I just love reading about it and following what's going on. And then for astronomy in particular, I had the pleasure of attending some workshop called the Launchpad Astronomy Workshop, which is an annual week-long workshop for science fiction writers taught by an astronomer at the University of Wisconsin, which is it's just a wonderful opportunity to learn a lot more about astronomy. And then later I attended a similar workshop on quantum physics for science fiction writers. And both of those things were wonderful opportunities to just kind of soak up knowledge and get ideas for stories.
Well, I love how science fiction writers really encourage each other and sort of play off of each other. And that's why, you know, Bria Burton, of course, her writing appears in many anthologies, which is one of the things that I really enjoy. I like to have anthologies around, and I think they're wonderful gifts because there's always at least one story in there. When you give a gift and you're not sure what the people like, they'll find at least, you know, a few stories that really grab them. And so I love anthologies. I think they're wonderful gifts, and I was always so thrilled ever since Bria started appearing here on Joy on Paper to just meet through her the other sci-fi writers, because you're a great community.
It is a wonderful community, and it's a very giving community, very generous community.
As I mentioned Mike Resnick, and of course he participated a lot in the Galaxy's Edge magazine, yeah. And a lot of wonderful short stories that appeared in there. So, you know, I think that's right now, in a way, sci-fi is just perfect because it does take us out of this world. And I think we sort of want to be out of this world. From your perspective, thinking about aliens, if you were an alien, would you come to the Earth? I'm not sure. If I was an alien, I think I'd try to find another planet. This place is
the cautionary zone for sure.
I mean, talk about chaos. It's like, yeah. Whoa. So do you think a lot about aliens, and do you think that they exist?
I would be astonished if they did not exist. But, you know, we don't have any evidence of it so far, but that doesn't mean that they're not here. It doesn't mean that they aren't paying attention to us right now. We're just beginning to be able to discover worlds orbiting other suns. In a matter of a decade or two, we've discovered thousands of them. So the possibilities are really limitless.
And, you know, the government won't tell us anyway. I think it's wonderful. I like sci-fi. I think you've really done a beautiful job in creating world building. And it's a complex because you have a lot of, you know, characters, a lot of things to remember and work with. From a technical point of view, do you use Word or do you use another program like Scrivener to keep track of everything?
I started using Scrivener, actually, when I was in the middle of writing, what was it? The Reefs of Time, which was published in 2019. For the reasons you just mentioned, to help keep track of all the complex elements and to be able to move pieces around as I needed to. So I've been using Scrivener for several years, and I do the kind of the final tweaking in Microsoft Word because I'm just more comfortable doing fine editing in that. But for casting the story and really keeping track of story elements and moving them around, I find Scrivener to be a very useful tool.
Oh, I do too. I think it's wonderful, especially for world building writing or historical writing.
To say that I started out, for many, many years, I used WordStar for DOS.
Oh, that's a long time ago.
but there are a few writers who still use it. I understand George R. R. Martin is still writing using WordStar for DOS.
Well, if it works for him, not bad, huh? I guess it's not bad. So as this was book four, what's happened since with your writing? Where are you now? What's your most current thing?
Okay. So, I spent 11 years writing the book that followed Sunborn. It's called The Reefs of Time. And by the time it was finished, it was a huge story and too long to be told in one volume. So I broke that into two volumes. It's a duology. It's really a two-volume novel called The Reefs of Time and Crucible of Time. And they came out in a quick sequence. And now I'm working on what I believe will be the final book of the series called Masters of Shipworld. The story at this point kind of revolves around an enormous station set out at the very edge of the galaxy called Shipworld, which can a huge habitat containing many individual sections that house refugees from endangered worlds all around the galaxy.
Well, I think, isn't it exciting, first of all, just being able to write and to have that joy of writing and continuing to write. But what I also am so thrilled with is the way that Bria Burton just found your book. And, you know, I'm sure you haven't done a lot of promotion for that particular book for I don't know how long, but she was so intrigued with it, loved it so much. And that's really why I do this program. Joy on Paper is about bringing to people books that perhaps, you know, I talk always to best-selling authors on their release dates, and that's always very exciting. But one of the real joys for me is to bring back books that people might not have looked at for several years. And I think Bria's done a wonderful, wonderful job in selecting you as her first one for 2022.
Thank you. Thank you. And I think it's worth noting that she discovered that book via the audiobook version of it. And this entire series is available in audiobook as well as print and ebook. And for narrator, I hired one of the best named Stefan Rudnicki. And Bria notes this in her review as well, that he is an absolutely magnificent narrator and brought his own artistry to the audiobook.
Absolutely, and I've been listening to that too. I haven't finished it, but I've been listening to it. I read the book, and then I read faster than I listen. But what is just wonderful is that she discovered you and that we can continue to talk about your books, and perhaps you'll come back and we can talk more about your more recent books. And when the next book is released, you'll be here on release date. Now that we've discovered you, I will be talking about your books to my listeners. And where should people find you? What's your website?
My website is starrigger.net. And probably the easiest way to find that is to just Google my name, Jeffrey A. Carver, and it'll come up at the top of the listings. And I also have a second site called writesf.com, which is basically a short course in writing science fiction for aspiring young writers.
Oh, that's nice. What's the name of it again?
Called Write SF.
Write SF. Okay, well, I will recommend that. I get so many emails from people saying, where should I start? How should I start? And looking for advice. And I will put that also on my website. And I will put this interview and Bria's, of course, review. And we will keep talking about your books because that's what we do here at Joy on Paper.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much.
Okay. Well, you hold on, and we're going to play before, you know, as we leave, I want to play Bria's wonderful, we call them book buzzes, and these are free two-minute promos, and I will play this, not just today. I will play it, you know, next month. I'll play it in 3 months. We play these over and over because people need to be reminded of authors and the name of their books, and so that you will find a new audience for your books, and my listeners will find a new author that they can fall in love with.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, hold on and listen again to Bria's Book Buzz.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2020 release in audiobook, Sunborn, by author and Nebula finalist Jeffrey A. Carver. Sunborn is book 4 in Carver's The Chaos Chronicles, and Skyboat Media produced this audiobook with stellar narration by Grammy and Hugo winner Stefan Rudnicki. Sunborn is also available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. In this highly imaginative space opera, Sunborn picks up where the previous installment left off, with John Bandicoot and his alien companions traveling in a star spanner bubble towards a way station for what they'd hoped was much-needed R&R. But instead, they're alerted to impending interstellar destruction from hyperspatial gravity waves of unknown origin. Stars in the Orion Nebula are dying, and an AI at the way station tasks this collection of capable compatriots with averting cosmic disaster. Aboard a space and time manipulating ship called the Longview, Bandicoot and his crew encounter otherworldly beings and multidimensional travelers. Yes, your mind will be stretched. For hard science fiction fans, this book may be a bit far out, even according to the author. But dabbling in fantasy, in my view, enhances the reading experience of this exciting story. Intriguing character dynamics, nonstop action, and point of view shifts that include bringing readers inside the mind of a sentient and singing star are just some of the elements this fantastical tale has to offer. Author Jeffrey A. Carver has been publishing science fiction since the 1970s, including the novelization of the Battlestar Galactica miniseries on Sci-Fi Channel. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and this is so exciting. When I was a little girl, I wanted to be a pirate. So I am so thrilled to welcome to Joy on Paper somebody who, I guess she was just like me when I was a little girl, Lee Lewis. Lee, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks so much for having me, Patsy.
Did I pronounce it right? Is it pronounced Lee?
It is.
Okay. I never know. I mispronounce people's names all the time. I thought maybe it's going to be Leah, but it's Lee. Lee Lewis. And I am so happy to talk to you because, when I got the... It was so funny. I opened the box with this book, and I open it, I see this cover. I got such a hoot out of this cover. It is so good. It's called
gorgeous, isn't it?
Pirate Queens. And it's just amazing. This is a wonderful cover.
Thank you so much. I wish I could take credit for it, but that is my illustrator, Sarah Gomez Woolley, who just did the most beautiful artwork for this book and really brought all the pirates to life.
She did. It's amazing illustrations. What an artist. She's able to envision everything that you write about, and it's thrilling, and all the details. It's one of the prettiest books I've ever gotten. Of course, that's saying a lot because, you know, I get a lot of Nat Geo books, and Nat Geo books are always so wonderful. And this one is just beautiful. So tell us about it. Tell us about how you got involved with this.
Sure. Well, like you, I was always kind of obsessed with pirates. And, you know, some years ago, I was reading an article on a website called Women You Should Know. It's a great website. And they did a feature article on this woman named Ching Shi, whom I had never heard of. And it turns out that Ching Shi was the most successful pirate who ever lived. And she was a Chinese woman who sailed in the South China Seas. And she ended up controlling 18,000 ships and 80,000 people. 80,000. Just to put that in perspective, Blackbeard, at his peak, controlled about 400 people. And so, you know, I read this article, and next couple of months, I kept turning it over in my mind and just thinking about Ching Shi and how incredible it was what she had done, how huge her empire was, but also the fact that I had never heard her name or that she wasn't a household name. So at some point, I was at the pool with my three kids, and they were walking the plank off the diving board, as kids do, and they were screaming pirate terms at each other. And when they finished, they came over, and I said, "Hey, can you tell me what pirates you know?" And they did, and of course, none of them were female. And that just kind of lit the fire for me. I knew I had to tell Ching Shi's story, and I told her story, and the unbelievably great National Geographic decided to publish that story, and they had the suggestion that we turn it into a collection of other female pirates as well. And here we are with Pirate Queen.
Well, it is amazing. As I said, I lived on Lake Superior. I was raised up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and we had our own raft. We had a raft. And, of course, we'd swim out to the raft, and when we'd be on the raft, and we'd actually carry food, we'd be on the raft, we'd put up all sorts of things, and we were pirates. We were on the high seas, and we were always thinking about gold doubloons. It was just so wonderful. And so when I got this, and I thought, this is such I got such a kick out of it. And you're right, nobody knew about her. I didn't know about her. And this... Tell us, how in the world did she accomplish this?
You know, she was a prostitute on a ship, and her ship was taken over by pirates, and the pirate king fell in love with her and asked for her hand in marriage, and she agreed, but I mean, just imagine the moxie of this. She agreed, but only under the condition that they'd be exact equals in all things. And incredibly... This, you know, the captain, the pirate captain, he agreed to her terms. He saw something in Ching Shi, could clearly see that she was brilliant, and he agreed to that. And so together they grew what was called the Red Flag Fleet, and that was kind of the trick for them was that they went out and they found the single ship pirates, or the pirate groups that only had three or four ships, And they brought them all together in one family. And when he died, his adopted son was intended to be, he was the heir apparent. And Ching Shih convinced him that she was the actual brains and that he should be the muscle, which was accurate. And so she took over, and she ended up really expanding the fleet to become the most successful pirate who ever lived. And in doing so, she ended up putting in this really fascinating code of rules where it was kind of an early feminist movement. You know, women weren't really allowed on ships, but if they were taken on ships, they were taken as property. And Ching Shih put in place a set of rules that said that if a woman was brought on the ship, there were two choices. Either one of her pirates could marry her, and then they would stay monogamous to each other forever, or she would be let free. Those were the only two choices. And if anyone disobeyed that, they were put to death. They were beheaded. So kind of an early feminist code. And the reason that we know that is because there was an English hostage, Richard Glasspool, who was on her ship for 3 months in captivity, and he wrote his account of everything that took place. And so we actually have a firsthand account, a primary source that tells us what happened on Ching Shih's ship.
Well, it is fascinating how you came across this, and I think it's just brilliant.
Thank you so much. It's so much fun to talk about.
Well, and you obviously had so much fun writing it and doing the research.
Oh, it's great. I mean, you know, I just told you about Ching Shih, but I could pick another pirate and tell you just as fascinating stories about them. They were just really these incredible women who bucked the system and beat the odds to take up this really pretty horrible, in most cases, life at sea because of greed or revenge or, you know, in Anne Bonny's case, she really just liked to fight. So piracy gave her an out for that.
You're talking about Anne Bonny.
That's right. Anne Bonny, she was just a ruffian from the early ages. She stabbed a servant girl when she was a kid. She burned down her dad's plantation. She ran away to the Bahamas specifically to become a pirate. And it turned out that her husband became a snitch against the other pirates, which was just so offensive to Anne Bonny because she believed in piracy. And so she took up with Captain Jack Rackham and went to sea dressed as a man so that she was able to board the ship. Women weren't allowed on the ship at that point for fear that it would anger the sea gods. And so many times in history when we see about female pirates, they had to dress as men to pass as men or they wouldn't have been allowed on the ship. Which is one of the reasons why we certainly don't know anywhere close to the number of real female pirates that there were, because if they successfully passed as men, we would never know their story.
I can see myself being a pirate. Yeah, I
oh. Well, so, not all glamour.
No, I know it's not all glamour, but sometimes I feel like I could be a pirate. So you've lived an exciting life yourself. Tell us about, you know, one of the things that I love when people write, you know, their bios on and you've, of course, mentioning all of the places that you've lived. So tell us, how did you get to all these places and tell us about them? Because I like the, well, of course, I like that you lived in England. I lived in England. I traveled Greece and Turkey a lot and lived in Iran. But tell us about your travels.
Well, it started early. My parents took us, me and my brother and sister, to Moscow during the Cold War when I was a kid, and we lived there for a year. And so I kind of had that in my blood, that we just loved to travel and loved the experience. And so my husband's Turkish, and so that certainly has allowed me plenty of opportunity for us together to make decisions to go abroad and to live abroad as expats. I backpacked in Europe for a year, and so I stopped and worked in Greece and in Italy. I went to grad school, and part of my program, a third of my program, was in Japan. So, you know, different reasons. It took me different places, but I always sought the opportunity to try something new. I always, you know, I definitely have the travel bug, and I love experiencing different cultures long enough to get a feel for the people and the food and the culture and the language and all of that. I mean, you know, I'm happy to go for a couple of days also. If I have the chance to go somewhere for a year, I'm going.
Well, and so you were in Moscow during the Cold War, and I was also in Moscow during the Cold War. Were you there at the point where you saw people in line for bread and toilet paper?
That's absolutely right. I was a toddler, so I don't remember it. But yes, my parents went. My dad was a professor, and he went on an exchange program for a year. And he was the first professor that the first in the exchange program where the family was welcomed instead of just an individual. But we got there, and the Russians didn't like that agreement, and they would only give us the arrangements for a single person. So for a full year, my brother and sister and I slept on a twin bed, and my parents slept on the floor, and my mom cooked all of our meals on a single burner instead of there was no stove, no oven. It was one plug-in single burner. And so it was, it just could not have been an easy year for my parents. But you know, I think it was a great experience for the kids.
Oh, it was a great experience. I'm going to tell you, I was a little older. I was teenager. And at the time, really, people really were in line for toilet paper. And I never in my life expected that I would be in America in line for toilet paper.
Thank you, COVID.
There is no toilet paper at my local store. None.
Oh, yeah.
There's no toilet paper. But it's so funny. During the summer when it was... you know, not so crazy, I really went in and I bought, you know, at the $1 store, $100 worth of paper towel and toilet paper and bleach. I did not know there was going to be a shortage of bleach. So, you know...
that was some foresight you had.
Exactly. Partly it was because of that time that I spent in Moscow. And by the way, also I was a teenager. I did not ever take a shower naked in a Moscow hotel because I knew that they had cameras on you. So, you know, it was a great experience. Yeah, but Turkey is lovely. Now, I did actually, we spent quite a bit of time in Turkey, and I enjoy Turkey very much.
Oh, I love Turkey. It's really my second home. We lived there twice. So right after my husband and I got married, we moved there for a couple of years, and I used to work in marketing, and so I worked for a marketing research company there. And then we moved back to the U.S. and had an opportunity to go back some years later. And I was pregnant with our second child, and so I had two of our kids in Istanbul. And we are all dual citizens, so we are a 10-passport family.
Oh, boy. Well, we had lots of fun. We actually drove from through Italy, took a ferry over to Greece and then arrived in Thessaloniki and drove all over Greece. And then we went to Turkey. And I must say, the Turkish people were so delightful compared. I'm going to get in trouble here saying this, but the Greek people were not very friendly. But when we got to Turkey, it was like a different world. They were all so friendly. And we had such a delightful time driving through Turkey.
Okay, wonderful. They're just wonderful people. I love the Turks so much. I love the Turkish culture so much. I'm always encouraging people to travel to Turkey. I mean, we had many friends and family that visited us there, of course. But I'm always encouraging people when they're thinking about vacations to consider Turkey.
Of course, nobody's considering a vacation right now. I don't think anyone.
Right. That's right.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. Luckily, we have some friends who they managed to do their wedding and their European 2-month honeymoon just before this whole pandemic-y thing, because nobody can do it anymore. I don't know what's going on.
Boy, they lucked out, huh?
Yeah, because where are you going to go now? You know, it's really terrible.
Right.
Boy. But, you know, the nice thing about being a writer is that you can stay at home. So if it's not so bad if they sort of lock you in. Particularly, I've been talking to Canadians and to some of the Canadians writers in Quebec who are literally locked in their houses.
That's right.
I mean, it's crazy. And one Canadian writer I was talking to, she has 4 teenage sons.
All at home. That sounds cozy.
It's cozy. She just wishes it had been like 10 years earlier when they were like 2, 3, 4, and 6. Those, the, you know, when they're a teen, 4 teenage big boys who want to be out there playing hockey.
Right. You need a little elbow room.
Yeah. It is not so much fun. It is not so much fun. But, of course, you're having fun. So you got this deal with Disney. How did you do that? This is... I'm sorry, not Disney. Oh, that's because mentally I'm thinking, oh, look at that. My mind has gone to seeing this as a cartoon or as a, yes. Ah, this is Nat Geo. Of course, I do Nat Geo books all the time. But why did I think of Disney? Are you going to get a film deal?
Let's hope so. But Disney now owns National Geographic, so you're certainly not far off.
I'm not far off because I knew it, of course, of Nat Geo book. But yes, I have a feeling somebody's going to make cartoons out of this, right?
Oh, from your mouth. Let's hope that happens.
Well, I think so. And when they see these illustrations, so beautiful. She is so good. Now, how did you work with her? She gave her the book and then she just went wild on her own?
Well, you know, it's a little known secret for people who are outside of the industry, but the way that it actually works in publishing for illustrated books is that a writer writes, and then they submit the manuscript, and a publisher picks it up, they buy it, and then the author sits back and bites their nails and hopes for the best, because authors have very little say in who the illustrator is. That's the publisher's foray. And they are experts in trying to make the match that will bring the book to life in the best way that it possibly could be brought to life. And so in this case, I sat back and waited and was absolutely delighted when they came back with Sarah Gomez Woolley's illustrations. And so I can't take any credit for that. And my work was done at that point. I had already passed off my work, and then Sarah took my word, and National Geographic was wonderful. They hired pirate experts to gather up packets on each of the individual pirates. So they handed over to Sarah a packet on each pirate that included all sorts of pictures and documentation so that could inform her decisions on how she represented them. So, for instance, things like what did the swords look like in the day? How long would the handles have been? How many sails did the ships have in that day in that region? And so Sarah had a whole packet of information to work with. And if you look at the illustrations, they're just meticulous in terms of how much detail they have and how historically accurate they are.
Oh, they are. You mentioned the sword one. I love the sword one. And then the interior of the boat. What beautiful illustration.
Yeah, they're really gorgeous. And even, you know, they made the decision, the art director had a vision, and she made the decision with Sarah to kind of do a crest for each of them. And the crest is representative also. If you look in the details of the crest, they have the right colors and the right animals that are representing what that pirate would have prized in that day.
So, you know, I think this is a wonderful book to give to, well... I think everyone will enjoy it. There's no age limit to this. This is for kids, for you know, everybody. And, you know, with Valentine's Day is coming up in February, and you always, you know, for when you're, like, giving a gift for a woman, and you say, well, what should I give her? I think a book about strong women. And
some, yes, I like your thinking.
I think it's a perfect one, because when you open it up, somebody gets this book and they open the package, and I think it's sort of empowering. You're saying to a woman, you send her this book and you say, whoo, look, you know, women can be strong and sometimes a little ruthless, but still it's fun to know about it. And since she used pink, so you know, loud and proud, I think it's a really great book to give to a woman for Valentine's Day.
Oh, that's a great idea. You know, I was in my bookstore here, my local bookstore. This book just came out on the 11th. And so I was in my bookstore on the 11th signing books. And a man walked up and he said, oh, well, I was looking for a book for a boy. And the bookseller said, how many books about Blackbeard do you think that most little girls have read by the time they're 10? And he started laughing, and he's like, actually, that's a really good point. I guess you're looking to round out the book shelf. Well, I bought a copy of the book.
Yeah, boys will love this. It's so nice and scary. Boys will I think they'll love it. It's just wonderful. The cover just grabs you. You'll never forget this cover. It's, you know, there are covers, you see covers, and then you forget where you saw them. No one will ever forget when they, and especially as I said, when I opened it up and I didn't know what to expect. I knew it was a Nat Geo book, and I didn't know, you know, what book was on the way. And I opened it up, and it's just like, I got such a kick out of it.
The other day I did a reading in a school visit in a sixth grade class about Pirate Queen, and this was a couple weeks ago, before the book had actually come out, but I had a PDF version of it, and I had stickers and things to hand out. And it was really interesting because after the class, the kids were great. They asked me a million questions. They were super enthusiastic. And after the class, they said, would anybody like a sticker? And it was the cover. And so it's this picture of the skull and crossbones and a woman, but it's with a crown and it's got flowing gray hair. And it just looks like a female version of a skull, kind of. And all of the kids, including all of the boys, were like, I want a sticker, I want a sticker. And literally all of them immediately took the backing of the sticker off and stuck it on their water bottle. And I was so thrilled to see that. You know, just that there's always the concern that it's going to be labeled as just a girl's book. And I was so pleased to see the enthusiasm from the boys as well. And they're wanting to be able to display this kind of fierce cover on their water bottle as they walked through the day.
It is fierce. And so that's just a marketing point for Disney. Pay attention, Disney. You're going to have water bottles all over America when you turn this into a wonderful, wonderful illustrated series. And I think they will do it. And it's going to be fun. Fun for you, that's for sure.
It would be great. I would sure love that. That would be great.
So what's the next? Well, first of all, your website, where do you want people to go?
You can find me at leelewisbooks.com or on Twitter or Instagram at leewriter.
Okay, and what else are you up to right now?
Oh, I'm always working on different books. I'm hopeful that there's a next in the series on this, but we'll see.
Well, I'm sure there will be. I have a feeling it's going to be a great success because if particularly, you know, people see it in a bookstore, they're going to grab it because it's just too wonderful to ignore. And the writing is beautiful. The illustrations are fantastic. I think you've done just a wonderful, wonderful job with it. So you make sure that as soon as you have a new book coming out, you let me know, and you'll be back here on Joy on Paper because it's just fun to meet a writer who is having fun writing. That's the whole point of this. To find joy, right? And you found the joy in writing.
That's right. And it's so much fun to talk with you and celebrate the joy of writing. So I so appreciate you having me on.
Okay. And your kids must be happy. Boy, their mom is a pirate queen.
Oh, they're so great. They're so excited about everything.
Well, you've done a brilliant job. And it's been an absolute joy talking to you today.
Thank you so much, Patsy.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Wow, it is. I love this cover. You know, I get Nat Geo books, and I have them on different parts of my house. There's always a Nat Geo book on a table. I don't think I have a table that doesn't have a Nat Geo book. And my biggest ones, I love the Owl book. I look at that book so often. But this is going to go on one of the side tables because it's just so distinctive. When anybody walks into my house, when people start walking into my house again, I don't know. I'm so tired of not having people over. This is not me. Normally, I would be having parties, and I'd be having people, and I'd be having events, and I'd be having meetings. This is crazy. This is driving me crazy. But this will be on a table because people will gravitate to this book. It's really a fun read, and I'm just overwhelmed sometimes when I get an author who's actually, you know, she's come out with an idea, she pitched it herself, got a deal, and to get a deal with Nat Geo is pretty great. Did the research, and it was a ton of research for this book. Historical research is always time-consuming. It's fun, but it's time-consuming. But she did it, and look what she's come out with, this wonderful book called Pirate Queens, and it's available in bookstores. I'm sure they put it right on the front shelf if they're open, and if not, you can get it online. And her name is Lee Lewis, L-E-I-G-H, Lee Lewis. And I get such a kick out of this, bringing books to you that you might not think about buying, and you might see it sort of on a shelf and say, well, should I read it? Yes, you should read it, because it's so in-depth, the research and the history and just the celebration of writing that Lee has put into this book. It's great. Oh, wow. What a day. What a day. I want to, again, thank EHS Solar for supporting Joy on Paper. They are fantastic. And I tell you, I got a call from my cousin. Oh, I'm not. I can tell you how happy he is with his solar system that he got in California, because the cost of electricity in California is, he thinks it's doubled, but he's not worried about it like he used to be. So thank you very much, and EHS. And if you need solar energy, just go to their website, go EHS, and perhaps this is the time, because it looks like I'm not even going to talk to my brother. My brother, of course, would normally use oil for his furnace up north in Upper Peninsula, where he's got 32 inches of snow on the ground. But instead, he's using lots of wood this year, lots of wood, because he picked up all the old wood that was on the ground, and luckily he stored it up. Anyway, everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't unless you start writing. So get busy and write and write and write, just like Lee Child did when he got fired from his job. And now we're going to have the new Jack Reacher streaming video series starting February 4th. And I'm hoping for Carol J. Perry, a wonderful, wonderful something with Hallmark Channel. Pick her up already, people. We need a new series. I am so tired of these old series. I need something new. Witch City Mysteries would be fantastic. And book 13 is coming out, and you can pre-order it. It's called Till Death, and it's going to be great. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. He saluted me because he wants to get me out of here already. I'm talking and talking, but I'm so happy to salute him because if I was a general, I'd make him a colonel. Okay. Bye-bye now, everybody. Bye.